Hello, Austin. My name is Anna Palmer, and I am very excited to welcome you all to our live Women Rule podcast taping here at South By. I am a senior Washington correspondent at Politico in Washington, D.C., and co-author of the Politico Playbook. If you want to know what's happening in politics, please subscribe. It comes in your inbox every morning very early to get the download on what's happening in these kinds of crazy times that we are in. And I'm excited to be here today on the South By podcast stage. Sitting next to me here, we have Wendy Davis, a former Texas State Senator and now the founder of Deeds Not Words. Wendy is also getting a movie made about her, and you might remember her famous 11-hour filibuster in the state Senate, and it's starring Sandra Bullock. Not too bad, I wouldn't mind. You know, Sandra Bullock wants to play me one day. I'll take that anytime I can get it. So we're going to get started here in just a minute. But first off, I just want to say thank you to the South by Southwest for getting this together, the staff, Wendy, our Politico Live staff, and thanks to you all, our listeners, and those who are live streaming in the audience. So without further ado, Wendy Davis.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Austin, Anna. We're happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I feel like we kind of see each other sometimes on the circuit of different conferences. So it's been about a year. So I'm excited to catch up with what you've been up to and what you're doing now. So as I said, you obviously kind of became national and internationally known for your filibuster on the Senate floor here in Texas. But since leaving office, you have started a group, Deeds Not Words, an organization helping empower women to fight for gender equality and make real policy changes. Obviously, something that there's a lot of talking about right now in the world. Talk to me about the group. Tell us what the goals are, you know, where you're at with that.
I really have a couple of goals with it. I mean, the primary goal, of course, is lifting up and empowering primarily that next generation of women. We actually have women older who are following us as well. So we're speaking to a fairly broad audience of women. But we work very closely with young women to train them on how to use their voices in effective ways. And one of those takes the shape of advocacy training, which we have done now in Texas for a little over a year. We trained almost 500 high school and college age women before the last legislative session and then worked very closely with them. We didn't just go do like a drop-in lobby day, you know, all wearing the same color t-shirts. We worked with them all the way through the legislative session on a number of pieces of legislation that they were very passionate about, one of which they actually created from scratch themselves, working with a state senator, others of them that were filed already, but they really wanted to be an active part of supporting them. And these all centered around the issues of campus sexual assault, the rape kit backlog in Texas, and then also sex trafficking and making sure that we're helping young people avoid the unwitting pitfalls that are out there in which people try to bring these young girls into a trafficking world. And what was great about it was that of the 10 pieces of legislation that they actively supported, they came to committee hearings and testified, they made phone calls and went to legislative offices, they passed 7 of those bills into law.
Wow.
So that's kind of, for me, the short-term goal, and it's a great goal, and I'm so proud of the work that they've done. But the longer-term goal is all about showing young women how to get in the room, where the room is, when the people in the room meet, how you show up and effectively persuade in that room, and ideally to look at the people sitting at that decision-making table and to see themselves there and to begin to catch the idea and the dream that they ought to be the voices sitting at that table. That would be, for me, the greatest outcome of the training that we've done.
Take a step back. In that training, I mean, one of the things obviously you're talking about here is the kind of a consistency, the fact that you were with them the whole way. It wasn't just here's a one day, how to talk to a member of Congress or your state senator. What was the biggest lesson you think that they were able to learn out of this?
I really think, and I saw so many aha moments with our young women, I really think it was about how powerful their personal stories are in being a tool for persuasion. And that's something that we've worked really hard with them on. Each of us has a story to tell. And oftentimes we're talking to lawmakers who may be able to form the empathy to actually step into our shoes and to consider things from our points of view. But we most effectively do that if we speak on very personal terms to them. And of course, we're not asking our young women in any way, shape, or form to make themselves vulnerable in a way that they're not comfortable doing. But to the extent that they are comfortable and empowered by sharing a story, an experience that can be persuasive, it's a very effective tool.
We talk to a lot of women across the country through the Women Rule podcast, and one of the big things that I think has resonated with me is the issue of kind of being able to take that step, that have that courage to go to and talk to, I'm sure, a lot of men, right? A lot of men are going to be in the state
legislature. Old white men.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
That don't look like you, that don't sound like you, that don't have the same experiences as you.
Right.
Is when you are kind of talking to these women and to our audience here and to those in the live stream, how do you tell them? I mean, your personal story is obviously important, but how do you get that courage to say, you know what, I can do this even though it's going to be scary?
It starts by them sharing their stories with each other. And I've watched it. They find their own empowerment through doing that. And they shore each other up, too. They've never gone to a committee hearing alone. There's always a group of them. And they feel incredibly confident in the fact that they're there and they have each other's back. We have their back, too. We literally go into the room and, you know, make sure they understand that we're there if they are concerned about anything. But I got to tell you, so many of these young women, the confidence that they just naturally bring forward is so much greater than what I was experiencing at that age. I'm in awe of them. And I think the more that we see young people taking their rightful place in the conversation politically around this country, of course, the young people from Parkland, Florida, who have just blown our minds with their commitment and their resolve to making sure that they are going to be the change that they want to see on gun ownership in this country, they are really seizing their power in a way that is remarkable, beautiful. I'm so excited by it because they bring with them the kinds of values that I think are really reflective of where we are as a country. And unfortunately, we're lagging way behind with regard to the folks who are representing us. And they're not really reflecting those values in the way I think a lot of us would like to see.
Let's take a step back from kind of what you're doing now. You've had a long career in Texas politics, in the legal world. You served on the Fort Worth City Council, then as a Democrat. You represented the 10th District in Texas in the state Senate. But I want to go even a little bit farther back, and talk about when you were a teenager and living as a single mom. Talk to us about that experience and how it shaped your worldview.
As I share with the young people that we work with, each of us brings our own lived experiences with us in the world, and we ought to allow ourselves to be informed by them, to be motivated by them. Everyone has a different experience, and we all have something wonderful and beautiful to learn from listening to each other. My experience has demonstrated for me the power and the importance for young women, particularly young women who are single moms, as I once was, to have the kinds of tools and resources to help us to succeed. And I know exactly what that looks like because I lived that experience. And therefore, I can share it in a way that hopefully informs the perspective of other people. I know that without community college, I would definitely not be sitting on this stage with you. So I know the importance of affordable higher education and making sure that we have entry points for people who otherwise might not walk onto a four-year university campus, their first experience with college. I know how important affordable quality childcare is, and that had I not had family and friends who helped me navigate my way working full-time and going to school, again, would not be sitting on this stage with you. And finally, and of course, a very large part of why I stood on the Senate floor in June of 2013 to fight for reproductive rights, I know without a doubt that without Planned Parenthood, without the contraceptive care that I received from them so that I could prevent a second unplanned pregnancy, I know I wouldn't be here today. So when we think about all of the tools and resources that are needed to make sure that women maximize our full individual potential and experience the greatest opportunities, not just for what we can achieve for ourselves, but also how we contribute to the bottom line economy and success of this country, we have to be looking at all of the tools and resources to make that possible. And I look at those challenges that I had in my early life as some of the greatest gifts in terms of helping me to be a good and effective advocate and policymaker when I was a policymaker.
Did that take time to, you know, you said it was a gift, right? I mean, in the moment, some of these hurdles were, I assume, very difficult, as we all have different hurdles in our life, but did it take time for you to kind of recognize them as a gift? Or, you know, looking back now, you can kind of say, oh, well, that really shaped me. Was it, you know, this empowered me in different ways or made me see the world differently?
I think I really came to understand it as a gift. Honestly, when I was in law school, I took this great class that had so much of an impact on me. It was called the Warren Court. And our professor invited us, instead of just thinking about how the law developed over time, he invited us to really think about the people that shaped the law. Earl Warren and his court of eight other white men who unanimously decided the 1954 desegregation case of Brown versus Board of Education. It helped me understand that we each bring with us something impactful that can help us become good leaders in the world, whatever shape that takes. And for the first time, I started looking at some of the experiences I'd had in my life as a really good thing because I knew they'd made me a better person in the long run.
So for those tuning in on the live stream, we're talking with Wendy Davis here at South By and talking about your experience. You're a single mom. You went to a law school. You eventually arrived at the state Senate, where in 2013 you held a now famous 11-hour filibuster where you couldn't eat or drink or take any breaks. You were fighting to stop an abortion bill that, among other things, banned abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy. Now, your filibuster delayed its passage, but it eventually got voted through. What lessons did you learn in that fight that you can kind of share with the rest of us?
I was amazed, awed. We'll never forget what it was like to be in the middle of what appropriately became known as the people's filibuster. People in our state tend to feel discouraged before we even begin. The deck is stacked so high and the decisions seem so predetermined that we typically give up before we ever even start. But for whatever reason, on that day, and in the days leading up to it, in the committee hearings, women, I think, had just had about all we could take in Texas. And women started showing up in extraordinary and record numbers. In fact, the day of the filibuster, I am told that it is the one and only day in the entire history of Texas that our Capitol, which you all know is very large, everything's bigger in Texas, that our Capitol had to be closed because it filled to capacity. And it was one of those days where people just made a pilgrimage, even though they hadn't even planned it when they got up that morning and they were eating their breakfast, but they came. And they didn't feel, I'm sure, that they were going to have a chance to do the remarkable thing they wound up doing in the end of that day, but they knew that it was important just to be there and to show their outrage at what was happening in this decision. That night could not have ended more perfectly. It really was a Hollywood, made-for-Hollywood movie moment, which maybe is why it will be a movie. And it's because when we got to that 15-minute before midnight deadline and the filibuster was finally, after a great deal of procedural arguing, ultimately called to an end, and my incredible sister Senator Leticia Vandepute asked such a poignant, perfect question, not just for that moment, but it had such a larger meaning that wasn't lost on anyone in the room when she said, at what point is a woman's voice or raised hand to be recognized over those of her male colleagues in the room? And it was like that match that lit the flame. All of that frustration that was there present in the Capitol erupted. And it was such a beautiful thing to watch. In fact, I was giving a speech at a Planned Parenthood event a couple of days ago, and they showed some footage of that night of women literally being dragged out of the Texas Capitol, the Senate gallery, by the security there. It just fills you with the greatest amount of emotion for how dedicated women are fighting for our voices to be heard, for our bodies to be respected, for our autonomy to exist, that it was symbolic of all of that. And because of them, at least temporarily, we did kill that bill that night. They got us past the midnight deadline, not just figuratively using their voices, but quite literally doing it. And what it taught me, and I think it taught a lot of us, not just in this state, but around the country, when we do fight, when we step forward and use our voices, we are more powerful than I think we really know. And we're starting to get a greater and greater sense of that as women right now. And we're seeing it in incredibly remarkable ways in terms of the number of women who are running for office, the record number of women who are showing up as voters in this state and elsewhere. We're pretty pissed off, and we're ready to be heard.
Do you think, just in hearing you describe it, it seems almost prescient to what's happening now with the Me Too movement, with Time's Up, with a number of women in all different workplaces, not just Hollywood or in journalism, but kind of standing up and saying, no longer, my voice matters. If I raise my hand, you have to pay attention to me. Does it seem like you almost were kind of, some of the kindling of what is happening now several years later?
I think women in Texas can rightfully claim to have been the kindling, definitely, because I do think it was an awakening, not just here, but all over the country, about what was happening and how we just couldn't take for granted that things were going to be okay. And of course, the result of the 2016 election, when so many of us hoped and believed we were going to be looking forward to an administration where we were going to see a very affirmative, proactive approach to equalizing women with pay equity and family leave and affordable child care and all of the things that were going to make that possible for us, knowing that we were going to have that champion in the White House, the understanding that came over all of us that not only were we not going to be in a proactive position, we knew that we were going to be in this place of defending the very things that generations before us had fought for. And I think it just, this determination that we were not going to let our country go there set in to such a powerful and amazing and incredible degree that we're seeing something extraordinary happening right now.
Obviously alluding to Hillary Clinton losing her race for president. I'm sure there's a lot of people in this audience and our listeners I know who think about running for office, who are women, and we're seeing a massive number of them reach out to different groups who help women run. You ran for higher office after being in the state Senate. You were a candidate for Texas governor in 2014. You lost to the Republican challenger, Greg Abbott, who is the current governor of Texas. Tell us about your experience of running for office, and I think maybe even more kind of what I would be very interested in is, how do you bounce back from that? How do you, you're not always going to win that first race. It sometimes takes two or three times to actually get elected.
I lost my very first race when I ran for the city council, and honestly, I thought I was going to die. I really did. That, for me, in many ways, was a harder loss than losing that gubernatorial race. But I learned that you come back. And I had the benefit of, as a young woman and then not so young woman watching Hillary Clinton. I mean, you talk about a woman who never gives up. I was so amazed by her resiliency and her fight that it gave me the courage to feel like I could keep coming back too. And I feel some responsibility to that, honestly, to whatever young woman out there might have looked at my race with disappointment. And we had so many young women who gave their everything to try to help us win that race, not just from Texas, but it came from all parts of the country. I feel a responsibility to show that I'm going to bounce back too. Because I think it's important that we do that, that we demonstrate that failure is a temporary and also a relative word, that within those moments where we don't succeed at the thing we were trying to do, there's so much success embedded in it. For example, there is hardly a week that goes by that I don't meet a young woman, whether I'm here or in another state, who doesn't share with me a story about either how pivotal the filibuster was and kind of turning their perspective and their career path, or the gubernatorial race. And I was so excited when I was campaigning for Hillary around the country to continually come across young women who had worked on my race in Texas and who had now taken their talent and skills that they'd learned as part of that race and were working in very prominent positions in Hillary's campaign. So there's so much good that comes from our effort. The advice I give to young women in that regard is if you're going to try something, try for something that really matters to you. And if you fail, fail beautifully and big and gloriously. Fail with the pride of knowing that you had the courage to try to do something really hard. My favorite quote in the entire world is the Teddy Roosevelt quote about the arena and how much more glorious it is to be that person who's willing to get in there with blood and sweat and to, at the best, win after daring greatly and at worst fail in daring greatly, but not to be one of those cold, timid souls who sits on the sidelines and can do no better than to critique the people who are trying. I really believe that to my core. And so in my failures now, and including in that gubernatorial one, it felt different to me than that first city council failure, because I knew that we had all worked hard on something that really mattered and that at least we had an opportunity for a while to seize the megaphone and talk about some of the issues that are important to us. And hopefully, you know, next time we've advanced the ball just a little bit further.
Well, let's talk about advancing the ball and what's happening in politics today, especially out of Texas, which just held its primary last week. I know we were talking backstage, that you were backing a few of the women running, including two candidates who could become the first Latina congresswoman from Texas. What's your take on what happened in the primaries? There was, you know, some early numbers that looked really good for Democrats, and then it kind of settled back down to where the way kind of turnout was more expected in line with kind of historic turnout.
I don't think it really toned down enough to say that it kind of, you know, sort of went back to the way things were. And I know that's not what you just said, Anna. We actually still almost doubled the number of people who early vote as Democrats in Texas. That is really, not just early vote, excuse me, but participate in a primary in Texas. We had a little over a million, and Republicans had a little over 1.4, close to 1.5. We, though, increased by almost 100%. They increased by about 16%. So by comparison, it's really exciting. And when you look at what typically happens in a general election in Texas, we usually will triple our primary turnout in the general. Republicans here tend to double their primary turnout in the general. So if we're able to continue to replicate that model, we've got some real excitement in store for us in November. And I'm really encouraged by how fired up I see Democrats in the state.
How do you think Democrats should run? What's the message in Texas? Because I think that's one of the big questions in D.C. has been, where is the Democratic message? It can't just be necessarily running against Trump or Russia collusion, things like that. What would be your piece of advice to those that are running in this state about how they should run?
It's the same advice I would give to a Democrat running anywhere in this country, and that is not to qualify our values, not to run as Republican lights, but to run hard and full as Democrats for the progressive values that we have always stood for and we have always fought for. I think we do ourselves a disservice by trying to, you know, waffle, thinking that we're going to pull voters in from the middle when we've got so many of our own voters that are just looking for someone who will inspire and excite them. We're having this kind of moment of this identity crisis in the Democratic Party right now. And you saw this reaction post-2016 election. Oh, my God, what went wrong? Are we talking too much about LGBTQ equality or women's reproductive freedoms or immigrant rights or whatever? Should we instead be focusing our message on an economic one? And it is mind-boggling to me because all of those things I just mentioned are economic issues. Women cannot succeed in this economy if we cannot own our reproductive destiny. We cannot have people succeeding in some of our most marginalized communities in this country if we don't have criminal justice reform. We cannot see people succeed who are in the LGBTQ community if we aren't making sure that they have full and equal rights in the workplace. And at the end of the day, all of these things fall under the umbrella of economic success, not just for individuals, but for the economy as a whole. So who we are as Democrats, what we've historically been, we have to just come out loud and proud with that and help people understand that if you want to see a strong economy, you need to support a Democrat. Because at the end of the day, not only are we going to make sure that every individual has an opportunity to realize their full potential, we're the ones who are still fighting like hell to save our public schools that are being unbelievably compromised at the national level right now and at every state level as well. So if we want to see a country that succeeds, we need to be, again, loud and proud about who we are, what our values have always been.
Well, we are going to get the wrap here in a few minutes, but I want to get back to you and a couple of questions here. We have mentioned a little bit about this movie that's being made, about the 2013 filibuster Sandra Bullock is playing you. What's been the most exciting process about that, kind of how, your involvement with it? Give us a sneak peek.
Honestly, the process hasn't unfolded very, very far yet. The most kind of stomach-turning, queasy moment I had about the whole thing was, what is the script going to look like? And I was really nervous when I read it up, when I picked it up to read it. Will I like the way the story was told? Mm-hmm. And I really like the way the story was told, I'm happy to say. A really beautiful writer, Mario Correa, who was a playwright, young playwright in New York, on his own decided that he wanted to do this, and he convinced Todd Black, a very well-known executive producer in Hollywood, to give him a year's worth of funding to work on the script. And I felt like he wrote something that wasn't only true to my story, but it was true to our story in this state as well, and really helps to celebrate how remarkable every individual is and was who was a part of making that moment what it became.
When is it going to be out? When should we be looking to go to the movies?
Honestly, I have no idea. I think
TBD, all right.
their hope is to have it filmed by the end of this year.
So let's end on a question that I have been wondering for a while. What's next for Wendy Davis? There's a lot of chatter in Washington about potentially you getting more involved with Planned Parenthood, maybe running the organization. Can you give us any sneak peek on the rest of the year, you know, decisions. We can make some news here. That could be fun.
I really want people to follow us at Deeds Not Words. I want you to please become a part of our community, because we aren't just doing work on the ground here in Texas. We do a lot of work digitally as well. And Lauren Baker, our digital director, is with us today. Planned Parenthood and the mission of Planned Parenthood, the healthcare provided by Planned Parenthood, is always going to be part of the core of who I am. And I'm so proud that I've had an opportunity to travel all over this country and help Planned Parenthood affiliates be successful. And I'm going to continue to do everything I can to stand for the work that they do, and obviously for women's reproductive freedoms in general.
It's a TBD, Planned Parenthood. Well, thank you so much, Wendy. I really appreciate
it. Thank you,
it.
Anna.